So the Certified Forest Therapy Guide, what does it mean? The first thing I like to tell people is I am a guide. I am not a therapist. I can't fix my own problems, so I can't fix any of your problems. But what I can do is create an opportunity for people to connect with nature and to find, you know, some healing, some deeper understanding of yourself and the world around you through the practice of forest therapy. So I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about what the history of forest therapy is. And you'll hear me say forest therapy, forest bathing. I use those two terms interchangeably. And mostly the reason for that is twofold. Number one, because if I tell people that it's forest bathing, depending on the audience, they sometimes imagine a bunch of hippie people running around naked in the forest with soap, and that's not what this is. And then when I say forest therapy, you know, sometimes people are a little standoffish when we use the word therapy, and it's like, I don't need therapy, I'm fine. That's changing a little bit because of COVID and the you know, our experience with isolation, but it does still spark a little bit of resistance from people. So it's the same thing, forest therapy, forest bathing. I use those two terms a lot. We're going to talk about the health benefits of being out in the forest and finding out that our mothers really knew what they were talking about all along. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about what to expect when you're out doing forest therapy. If you have an interest in joining me on a walk, we'll talk about some of the walks we have coming up and sort of what you can expect from that walk. All right. So the history of forest therapy is actually a really interesting one. It started back in the 1980s. Japan was noticing that a lot of their communities in the urban centers, they were having a lot of autoimmune diseases and stress-related illnesses in their populations that they weren't seeing as a direct translation to people in the rural settings. And so wanting to know exactly what that, like why that was happening, they undertook, you know, decades worth of studies and realized what our mothers always knew, which is when you spend time outside in nature, you feel better. But the beautiful thing about these studies is that it actually started to put that quantifiable scientific data in behind what our mothers always intrinsically knew. And so as a result, they developed a program called Shinrin-yoku. And it loosely translates into bathing in the forest atmosphere, forest bathing, forest therapy. And so what they found was all kinds of information about how our bodies react when we are out in nature. And I mean, if you think about it, you know, my mother would agree, we are animals, right? We're definitely not trees. So when we go out into nature, we're actually returning to that place where we came from. And so there's all kinds of healing benefits to returning home. So some of those benefits, and you know, you'll hear me say, I don't talk a lot about science, I don't talk a lot about being a doctor because I'm not one, but we have two different types of nervous systems. We have the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. We all know about the sympathetic nervous system. It's our fight or flight, right? That's the stuff that kicks in when, you know, the bear's chasing you through the woods or when something bad's happening. It's a lot of adrenaline and cortisol. These are stress-related hormones that pump all of our blood and all of our energy to either our legs or our biceps, depending on whether we're fighting or flighting. Our parasympathetic nervous system is the opposite of that. It's the rest and digest nervous system. It's the nervous system that kicks in after turkey dinner, where you just sort of sit on the couch and let all the blood go to all of the organs that start to digest our food, right? And so it's really the nervous system that tells us that everything's okay, everything's all right. And what we found is that when you go out into the forest in a method, sort of a memorable way, in a way that's sort of really focused on staying in the moment, what we find is that our parasympathetic nervous system starts to kick in. So as a result, that cortisol and adrenaline goes down, right? All those stress-related, assuming you don't run into the bear, but you know, all those stress-related hormones decrease. Now, there's a really interesting thing about stress-related hormones and mental health, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that perhaps in a minute. Maybe. Let's see. Yeah, mental health. So here's something interesting that happens. I know probably more about mental health than I ever wanted to know. I married my husband 19 years ago, and about 5 years into our marriage, he was in a car accident, and as a result, he suffers from chronic pain. And because he suffers from chronic pain, his cortisol and adrenaline levels are constantly elevated. Because of that, his body can't produce serotonin. Serotonin is our happy hormone. It's the hormone that makes us feel good. It's the hormone that makes us feel like all is well in the world. And anybody who has a depletion in serotonin usually suffers from severe depression, which my husband does. And this is why I know about mental health now. Honestly, the story goes, I got into forced therapy to fix my husband, like all good women should, right? We keep trying. It doesn't work, but we keep trying. So because we have this, the parasympathetic nervous system, when it kicks in, our cortisol levels, our adrenaline levels go down. That allows us to build up our serotonin levels, all those happy hormones, and we start to feel better. We start to actually feel some hope. You know, we start to feel like, oh, you know, how many of you have ever gone for a walk in the forest and go, wow, I really needed that today, right? And suddenly all the world's problems don't feel so heavy on my shoulders, and this is why. Now, you know, when I got into forced therapy, you know, I will say that, well, I haven't been able to fix my husband. We did actually experience, through the process of forced therapy, we did experience something that really helped our family. Because as somebody who suffers from mental health challenges, my husband depended on me. Whenever things went wrong, thank God, right? Knock on wood, thank God, we have a great relationship. And he can tell me when things are not going good and when he's really, really low so that we can get him the medical help and the psychiatric help that he needs. But I was always the person that he went to. So it always landed on my shoulders. He never took responsibility for that himself. And the first time after I did all my training in forest therapy, I was like so eager and thinking, I'm going to fix him now. It's going to be great. And I take him out into the forest and I say, this is going to be awesome, sweetheart. We're going to take you out into the forest and I'm going to walk you through these invitations and you're going to feel wonderful afterwards. And after the first couple of invitations, he came up to me and he said, sweetheart, he says, I know you really wanted this to work, but I have to tell you, I'm really worried. I think I need to stop. And I looked at him and I said, well, why? Like, what's going on? He says, you're walking me through this invitation. And the whole time I'm thinking, I just want to walk into the river and drown myself. Terrifying, right? So the wife side of me is freaking out, as she should. But the guide side of me, that I had just been away for all the 6 months worth of training, the guide side of me said, hold on, that's okay. Trust the process. And so I looked at him and I said, okay, sweetheart, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do one more invitation, right? And if you're still feeling that way, then we'll stop. No problem. But just do one more. Just trust me on this one. Let's do one more. So we did this one more invitation, and I'm going to talk to you about invitations in a little while, don't worry. But when we did this other invitation, I invited him and the few friends that we had to wander off into the forest, find, you know, a tree or a rock or something that you wanted to sit with, and just sit with it for a little while, see what happens. So he tootles off, and the wife side of me is paying very close attention to where he's going because he starts wandering over towards the river. And the guide side of me is going, chill, Virgo, it's going to be fine. So I'm watching him as he's wandering down towards the river, and then eventually he finds this little rock, and he sits down on the rock. It's like, okay, so he's cool. I go off. I get ready for the next invitation. I call them all back. They all come back. They sit down. And I have to say, I'm super proud of him because he starts talking about his mental wellness with our friends hanging around. So that was a huge step to begin with. But he said to them, he said, you know, I really wanted to stop because I was worried about my you know, desire to go into the river. He said, so as I started this last invitation, I started to wander over to the river. He said, and the whole time I'm thinking, I want to get to the edge of the river. I want to get to the edge of the river. But as I'm wandering towards it, the closer I got, the muddier the ground got. floodplains. And so the muddier the ground got, and I started to get wet. My feet were getting wet, and I was getting really frustrated because he wanted to go into the water, but he didn't want to get wet. And as he's wandering towards the river, he's running into all these what he calls prickle bushes, what I call raspberries. And he's wandering through them, and they're scratching at his legs, and they're catching on his clothes, and he's getting frustrated. So he just plopped himself down on this rock and pouted. And he realized after about 5 minutes of sitting on this rock and contemplating what the problem was, he realized that the river and the environment that he was in was actually telling him this wasn't the time. This wasn't the time for him to go to the river. This was the time for him to just sit by the river and watch the water go by, recognizing that sometimes our struggles just go by. We just have to sit and let them pass. It doesn't sound like a huge issue. It doesn't sound like a huge aha moment. But for him, it was the very first time that he took responsibility for his own mental wellness and didn't try to give it away to somebody else to look after it. And that's the kind of experience that I find over and over again. So, you know, sometimes that impactful, sometimes less impactful. But that's the kind of experience that I hear over and over again when I take people into the forest. And mental health nowadays, like I said earlier, with COVID, I think we're finding more and more the sense of isolation that we got in during COVID. We're talking more about our mental wellness. We're talking more about our need to connect with people and our need to connect with ourselves and that sense of community that we get. One of the other things that we found, one of the benefits of spending time in the forest and forest therapy, is when we deal with kids. And, well, quite frankly, adults, too. We hear a lot these days about kids with attention deficit hyperdisorder, ADHD. You know, my brothers, both of them have it. They weren't diagnosed because back then they were just called hyper kids. But now we have a term for it. But, what we find when we take kids that have ADHD or are just, you know, those kids that just have a lot going on, when we take them out into the forest, they're actually able to focus better on what it is that you're teaching them. And this, I think, happens for a number of reasons. Well, I don't think it. I know it because there's been all kinds of studies of people smarter than me that did these studies that said, you know, when you're out in the forest, there's all kinds of things going on that are keeping all of those other senses going. There's birds chirping, there's the wind is blowing, there's smells in the air. So the kids, the ones that have ADHD, have lots of things to keep their minds active so that they can actually focus on the task at hand. So we've taken kids out into the forest and actually not only done forest therapy, but also taken them out into the forest to teach them things like math and English. And we're actually finding that when you teach them those types of subjects in a natural setting, they're actually able to retain it better because they can connect it to the experience that they were having. We also notice that their creativity goes up, right? Because all of a sudden all the sticks become guns, all the rocks become bombs, with boys, not with girls, but, well, maybe with girls. But so we find that their creativity goes up, their ability to solve problems for themselves go up, and their ability to think about things on a much grander scale. I mean, kids say, well, they've made a show, right? Kids say the most amazing things. But they really do. I took my son at the age of 7. I took him out to do some forest therapy. We sat at a tree. He found this cedar tree, and he climbed right into it. There was like 5 different trunks, and he sat right in it. He looked like he was a king on his throne. And he sat there for probably about 15, 20 minutes in the middle of winter, which is a long time for any kid to sit still. And afterwards, as we were walking home, he says, Mom, he says, I think, you know, when you spend time with a tree like that, I think part of your soul goes into the tree, and then part of the tree's soul goes into you. So that when you go for a walk in another forest and you see another tree that's similar to that tree, it already knows you because you've already got that tree in your soul. Like, 7 years old, and he's a boy. Like, boys don't think that way, right? But it's amazing the kinds of intuitions and the kinds of thought processes when you can take on big, big subjects like that, like your soul and your spirit and your connection to the natural world. So we're seeing that unplugging them from the Game Boys and the video games and plugging them into the forest has a really great positive impact on their ability to understand and to learn about their world and about themselves. So we have all those other things going on. There's one other thing that actually happens, and that's that when you go into the forest and you spend time, the trees have this great ability to heal themselves. And it's something called phytoncides. So when a tree has a bacteria or a fungus infection or something going on, it produces these phytoncides. It goes out, it kills whatever it is that's attacking the tree. And so it's kind of like the tree's immune system. Well, when we're out in the forest, those phytoncides is kind of like an essential oil. And so when you walk in the forest, those essential oils are hanging in the air. And when you breathe them in, they act in your body the exact same way they act in the tree's body, in that it boosts your immune system. It boosts your natural killer cell production by up to 54%. And that's after 20 minutes of walking in the forest. And it lasts for 3 days. It's like if you could put that in a bottle and stick it on a shelf in Shoppers Drug Mart, it would fly off the shelves. You wouldn't be able to keep it in the shelves. And yet, for some reason, we have a really hard time giving ourselves permission to go for a 20, 30-minute walk in the forest every 3 or 4 days to boost our own immune system in a natural way. And phytoncides have been known, like the medical industry has known about phytoncides for years. They actually use some phytoncides in chemotherapy treatments, especially for women's cancers, breast cancer and ovarian cancer. And I'm not suggesting, well, none of you are going to get ovarian cancer, I hope. I'm not suggesting that going for a walk in the forest is the only thing you should be doing, but certainly going for a walk in the forest after you experience some of those traumas and some of those diseases is a really great added benefit of healing. In fact, they actually did one study in a hospital. They took gallbladder operation patients, and they took, this was back in the 70s or 80s, and then they reproduced it again in the 2000s. They took half of the patients and they stuck them in recovery rooms that were just, they had no windows. It was just like, or their windows looked out onto a concrete wall. And then they took the other half and they put them in rooms where the windows looked out into natural areas. And what they found was the patients that were in rooms that looked at natural areas used significantly fewer pain medications. They were released 20 to 30% faster from the hospital than the other patients. And that they demonstrated an overall sense of well-being more so than those that looked at concrete walls. So that's just looking at natural areas. You can imagine the added benefit of actually being in those natural areas while you're going through that healing process. So what can you expect when you go for a walk with me in the forest as a certified forest therapy guide? Like I said, not a therapist. I am the guide. I'm a guide that opens the door and creates opportunities for people to connect with nature. And so a couple of things that you're going to notice is that I offer a series of invitations. And I've talked about these invitations a couple of times. The invitations are really open-ended opportunities or suggestions on how you might want to connect with the natural world. They are invitations, so they're there for you to accept or to reject. Don't reject me, but you can reject the invitation if you so desire. So if I invite you to stand with your eyes closed and take a deep breath and you think, if I stand with my eyes closed, I'm going to fall over, then, you know, sit with your eyes closed or stand with your eyes open. Do whatever it is that feels right for you, right? So there's no right or wrong way. There's no rules around forest therapy. The invitations are really just offered as suggestions, ways that you can experience the forest that perhaps you haven't thought of before. They're really intended to help you deepen your relationship with nature. And as a result, they're based a lot on our senses. And people will often say to me, well, you know, why are they so sensory-based? What's the purpose of having a sensory-based invitation? And if you think about it, when you're a child growing up, when you're an infant, the first way you interact with the world around you is through your senses. right? You pick things up, you touch them, even the things you're not supposed to. You know, you touch things, you put them in your mouth, you stick them up your nose. We don't stick anything up our nose. But, you know, that's the way we go through life, right? Is trying to figure out what can we do and what can't we do by touching things and tasting them and all that kind of stuff. So we do go through the senses. This is a really slow process of introducing you to your senses, slowing you down. Right? We have a lot going on. We fill our lives up with a lot of stuff. And we fill our brains up with a lot of stuff. And so this process of force therapy is really about taking you out of your head and dropping you into your body. And the best way to do that is to start by going through and walking you through all of your different senses. I'm going to go back. I just want to go back for a second. I don't know if I can do that. Let's see. There we go. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this lovely lady, Lindsay. She actually went to Fleming College for forestry. I taught her because after I got out of Fleming College, they loved me so much. They invited me to come back and teach. We have that in common. And so I taught her for a little while at Fleming College in forestry. And then about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, she was in a car accident, and as a result of her car accident, she has become what the medical term is, incomplete quadriplegic. So that means that obviously she does have some large motor movement in some of her limbs, but she doesn't have any fine motor movement. And so she's in a wheelchair. So you can imagine somebody who went through forestry. When I spoke to her just before we did this forest therapy session, she hadn't been in a forest. She hadn't been around trees in, you know, a number of years, 3 or 4 years, because of the accident. And so she asked me if she could participate in a forest therapy walk, given that she was in a wheelchair. And I said, of course. We have accessible trails at Ken Reed where you can get wheelchairs. We have one that you can actually get a hospital bed down. So come on out, and we'll do this. So she came out, and you can see here that one of the invitations was to sit with this tree. And so she sat with this tree for a while, and very slowly, with a little bit of help from her mom who was there as a caregiver, she was able to reach her hand out and touch the tree. And afterwards, we came back into our circle, and I'll talk about that in a second, but she came back to our circle, and she was sharing, and she said, you know, she said, as a result of my injury, one of the things that my brain does is it translates all physical touch as pain. So anytime she says, I have three or four kids. She says, anytime my kids come to hug me, it hurts. Because, not because they're actually hurting me, but because my brain is relaying those signals as being pain. And she said, by sitting with this tree over the course of 20 minutes and slowly but surely eventually reaching her hand out and touching the tree, she said it was the first time since her accident that she'd been able to touch anything without feeling any pain. And so she took that experience home and sat with her kids for like 15, 20 minutes at a time and talked to them about the process of, you know, how to approach her for a hug and all of those kinds of things. And she was able to hug her children for the first time without pain by going through that process, which is pretty spectacular. But it shows you that sometimes we do things in life that we just assume our brain understands and our body understands, and we don't really pay attention to it. And you can imagine the impact that those hugs have. Can you imagine translating that to your own life? If you actually thought about hugging somebody for 15, 20 minutes before you hugged them, the impact that that hug would have on you rather than just walking in and giving them a hug and then releasing them. So try it sometime if you've got 15 or 20 minutes to spare. So one of the things we do when we do force therapy is we slow down, right? I often say to people, we're gonna walk slowly along the trail, and that's probably slower than what you consider slow to be. Because we're in a rush, and we're destination-bound people, right? We're a society that talks about getting from point A to point B, because point B is the destination. So the whole time we're on our path from A to B, we're thinking about B instead of thinking about where we are and what we're experiencing in that moment, in that journey. And so one of the invitations is we walk very slowly across the trail with the idea of really noticing anything that happens to be in motion. And so during one of those invitations I took a picture of this beautiful butterfly, and I was sitting on this lovely piece of goldenrod, and I was like, wow, that's really pretty, you know. Oh, look, there's a little spider web on it. And then as I look closer, it's like, oh, wait, there's like two more really tiny spider webs. And as this, I don't know if you've ever had a butterfly land in your hand or land on you, you know how much they weigh, right? Nothing. And yet, as this butterfly sort of crawled across the goldenrod, you saw the goldenrod dip from the weight of the butterfly. And then, but this string here of the spider web was attached to another plant. And so you could see the other plant bowing as the butterfly was walking across. And that happened, like I sat there and I watched this happen for like 10 minutes. And yet, on any other day, as I'm walking through the forest, I wouldn't even, not only would I not have seen the spider web or any of that, I probably wouldn't have seen the butterfly. Because I was moving so quickly, I'd probably scare it off before I actually got there. And so the reason that we do this slow moving is, number one, to teach us about the power and the beauty of staying in the moment, of staying where you are and not worrying about where you're going to. But it's also to really help you to reconnect with the natural world around you. It's very rare when you go for a walk in the forest, it's very rare that you'll see anything short of maybe a couple of birds and some squirrels running around, maybe a chipmunk or two, depending on the forest that you're in. And yet I've had deer walk right through a group of 30 people sitting in a field. And the deer just wandered through, took a look around, nibbled on some grass, and kept on wandering. And everybody's sitting there going, oh, my God. And the reason for it is because we were so still, because we were so quiet. And there's this wonderful reset that happens in the forest. If you ever go into the forest and you just sit, and it normally only happens when you're by yourself, so it's pretty amazing that you can do it with 20 people. But you go in and you just sit for a couple of minutes. You'll hear, like, there's all kinds of bird chatter and, you know, that annoying red squirrel in the tree and all that kind of stuff. But after a couple of minutes, that all dies away, and the forest kind of goes, okay, they're gone. And now all the real things can start happening, right? Now the snake comes out, or the rabbit starts hopping down the trail, or all these other things. The forest just comes to life, and it comes to life around you because it didn't realize that you were still there, because you weren't walking through, chatting with your friend, and stomping through the forest, and all of that kind of stuff. It's really magical. And part of our training is actually to go and sit in the same spot, in the same forest, every day, for a minimum of 20 minutes, for 6 months. Now, I took my training in August, so do the math. September, October, November, December, January, February. Sitting in the forest for 20 minutes, it was cold. But it was amazing to see, because I still go to that same place. I don't go every day, but I still go to that same place. And I'll tell you, after a year of doing it, I could go and sit down on the log and I'd have a blue heron walk across my legs because it just got used to me being there. And then somebody would walk down the trail and all the animals would scatter. And, you know, he'd say, good morning, whatever. And they would continue on and I would sit there, and then the rabbit would come out from its little hole under the log that I was sitting on and start nibbling the grass beside me because it started to get used to me. I felt like a Disney princess. It was amazing. But anybody can do that, right? Anybody can develop those connections with the natural world by continuing to go out, by continuing to sit still, slowing down. So you've heard me talk about council, or this little circle thing that I talked about, and I know you're all men and the whole concept of sharing in a circle is kind of cringy, but that's okay. You'll be okay. It's going to be fine. So here's what we know. And this is based a little bit on First Nations practice. Now, I am not First Nations from North America, so I cannot speak and tell their story because it's not my story to tell. But a couple of months ago, a couple of years ago now, I spit in a tube and I flipped it off to Ancestry.ca, and they came back and they said, anything to do with beer and swords, I'm your girl, right? That's my ancestry. And so, but when I started looking at my ancestry and started looking at all the First Nations of my people, of the people I hail from, I realized they do this too. They did that, right? This tends to be a practice in a lot of different communities. And what it is essentially a community coming together around a common problem or a common story that they wanted to tell. And in order to do that, you need to have some rules of order. And the first rule is you have a talking piece and you have a, and then some, and some of them have listening pieces, but you have a talking piece. And you can see here these individuals sharing their talking piece, passing it from one to the other. So council, what we've determined is that when you'd go out and you do forest therapy, it's pretty spectacular. It's pretty amazing. But what really helps us to cement it in our memory and in our DNA is sharing it with someone else. And so we create these opportunities to share it after each invitation. We come back, I hold up a talking piece and offer a prompt or a question, and then people answer the question as they go around the circle. And it usually has something to do with the invitation that was offered. And that's where we start hearing all of these different stories, all of these amazing ways that people interact with the forest and the insights that they get. But one of the beautiful things about this council piece, and I mean, you know, if you come on a walk with me, you'll hear me tell the story all the time, but one of the amazing pieces about it is when you're not holding the talking piece, because unless you're me, speaking in public is like terrifying. For me, it's not. But when you're not holding the talking piece, you only have one job, and that's to listen from the heart. And that means you're listening without judging the words of the person that's speaking. You're not worried about, you know, whether or not you agree with them. You're not worried about whether or not you were going to say the same thing as them. It's really just listening. And in our society, most of the time, we're listening for the opportunity to respond. We're trained from a very young age to actively listen, to nod in the appropriate places, to respond when somebody says something. And so oftentimes, we listen for that opportunity to respond rather than for the beautiful gift of just hearing somebody else's truth, allowing them to speak. And so that is something that is beautiful that happens at every walk, is all of a sudden, as the walk progresses and people get more comfortable with talking to this group of strangers, is you start to see them really opening up and really sharing some of those thoughts and ideas that nobody had ever bothered to listen to before. It's really quite amazing. So at the end of every walk, we do something called tea ceremony, where I make some sort of tea concoction from the plants in the forest that we were walking in. It's okay, don't worry, it's safe, I'm trained, I'm a professional. So we make cedar tea or white pine tea or sumac tea, not poison sumac, but the other sumac tea. And it's really just a way of taking the forest into your body the way that you've been spending time in the forest body, right? It's also a really neat way, and anybody that's ever done any kind of energy work or even deep therapy work, they'll know that sometimes you get so into your body that you don't come back out, right? You end up spending time in this liminal space where it's like, oh my gosh, like 3 hours have gone by and I've just been wandering around in the forest with nowhere to be and nothing to do with a bunch of other people. This has been awesome. But now I got to get in my car and I got to drive. So the tea ceremony often acts as an opportunity for us to reconnect people to their brains before we put them in their cars and let them drive down the streets of Lindsay. So, if I've inspired you to come for a walk with me, we've got a couple of walks happening. Oh, that's kind of hard to read. We have a couple of walks happening over the next little while. We have one on Saturday, May 13th, the day before Mother's Day. We have one on May 26th, and one on June 23rd. All three of those are at Ken Reed Conservation Area. And then we have one coming up on July 21st at Pigeon River Headwaters Conservation Area. So if you're interested and you want to really see what this is about, because I'll tell you, I can stand here for hours, clearly, and tell you all about forest therapy, but at the end of the day, you probably don't really know what it is I'm talking about unless you actually come out on a walk with me and get the opportunity to experience it for yourself. So I hope that you will come out and give it a try. Let's just keep talking. Thank you.